Arm Aronson of the Total Sports Recall Podcast here to share a winning strategy for Father's Day from our partners at Sterling Roastery. If your dad treats his morning coffee like a pregame ritual, you need to introduce him to the Sterling Roastery lineup. This isn't that stale, over-roasted stuff sitting on our grocery shelf. Sterling roasts their beans multiple times a week for unbeatable freshness. The smart play? A coffee subscription. He gets to choose his grind, from French press to espresso, and his favorite roast, depth. It's a world-class lineup of Java that shows up like a reliable veteran on a perennial powerhouse team. Go to sterlingsoap.com and set him up. He'll thank you with every cup. That's sterlingsoap.com.
Does a 14th overall pick in the NFL draft hold the secret to a Hall of Fame defense? From the K-Gun maestro Jim Kelly, leading Buffalo to four straight Super Bowls, to Dadrell Revis, who turned the league into Revis Island. This specific draft slot has produced some of the most dominant forces to ever step onto the gridiron. Today, we're breaking down the top five players who prove that pick 14 is where perennial all-pros are found. Welcome to the Pigpen. Let's look into the history with our guest, Ed Cleese, as we enter into Pigskin Dispatch's 32-day journey into the draft history. Welcome, folks. We are 14 days away from the NFL draft in Pittsburgh for 2026, and we are counting down by celebrating the history of some legendary players picked today. We're going to talk about those ones in the slot number 14. Joining me, as always, is Ed Cleese. Ed, welcome back to the Pigpen.
Hey, Darren. How are you today?
I'm doing super, Ed. It is getting really exciting. We're getting in these top tier draft picks, you know, the cream of the crop coming up, you know, and get to talk about some interesting players here at slot number 14.
Yes. Especially recently, I've kind of bagged on a lot of the recent picks that we've talked about. This one, there's some hope. Tyler Warren was taken last year by the Colts, 14th overall. It was a really nice rookie year. Mm-hmm. Chris Lindstrom has been to four straight second team all pros as a lineman for the Falcons. And then probably the big one is we got Kyle Hamilton taken in 2022, and he is on that massive trajectory to stardom. He is, you know, there's a really good chance that in a few more years he'll already be on this top five list because he's a star.
Yeah, he really turned the Ravens defense around just by his play. And when he got hurt the end of last season, you could tell they sort of dropped off quite a bit
from that. Yeah. Yeah, for sure. Definitely. Yeah, he's a real stud.
Yeah, definitely. All right. So you want to talk about some honorable mentions before you get in your top five?
Well, you know, we always want to talk about our busts. First of all, there's no QBs taken since 1988 this pick, except for one guy that you'll hear about later. We've had only one taken, and he's going to make one of our lists. There's not a ton of notable busts. Derrick Brown was it was a tight end taken by the Giants in 92 that only wound up with 43 receptions in his career. That's not good. Jackie Shipp was taken by the Dolphins out of OU, I believe, in 1984, didn't really do anything. And then between 1982 and 91, We've really railed on running backs in these podcasts so far. And so between 82 and 91, four running backs were taken 14th overall. Barry Redden by the Rams, DJ Dozier by the Vikings, Gaston Green by the Rams, and Leonard Russell by the Patriots. So Redden and Dozier never even reached 500 yards in a season. And Green had one random 1,000-yard year, and that was it. And then kind of funny, we talked about John Stevens for the Patriots a few many podcasts ago, that he was offensive rookie of the year for the Patriots and then never did anything else as a running back. Well, in 91, the Patriots took Leonard Russell. He was the offensive rookie of the year and then never did anything after that again. So they had two running backs that won offensive rookie of the year within like a 4-year span, and then their career was kind of over just like that.
Yeah, they say that's one of the shortest careers in the NFL is running back. So
yeah, so sometimes
definitely
it's one
holds
year.
True there.
Yeah, sometimes it's 1 year. In terms of honorable mentions, we got Jeremy Shockey, who was drafted in 2002, was a really nice player. I think sort of his persona was maybe a little bit bigger than his production. You know, if you actually go back and look at his numbers, they aren't like eye popping or anything. But he was a really nice player. Thomas Davis was a really good player for the Panthers for many years in Carolina, drafted in 2005. Malcolm Jenkins, a really nice corner for the Eagles, drafted in 2009. I think he played for the Saints as well. And then my toughest cut was Reuben Brown, was an offensive lineman for the Bills. Yeah, I cut him nine Pro Bowls for an offensive guard.
Wow. That is and doesn't make the top five with nine Pro Bowls. Oh my gosh, Bills Mafia is going crazy right now.
They're gonna come after me.
Yeah.
Sure. Yep.
You might have a horse head in your bed tonight when you wake up. So, all right. Well, who do you have in the top five then?
So top five, and you know, I debate on some of this, like how much do we weigh a hot 3 or 4 year period versus a long career of consistency like Reuben Brown. And I went ahead and I broke the tie between Reuben Brown and my number five. I've got Robert Quinn, taken in 2011, defensive end by the Rams. He was really hot in those final years in St. Louis. A lot of people don't remember him because they weren't good then. But he had 40 sacks over a 3 year period. That's very good. He had 19, Darren, in 2013. You get in that 19 sack range, you're talking about all-time great pass rushers in history. He also had 23 tackles for loss that year, which led the league. So a massive disruptor. He moved to L.A. with the Rams. He was kind of so-so for there. Then he was with the Dolphins, with the Cowboys. He had 11.5 sacks with Dallas. But then what put him over the top for me was in 2021, he was with the Bears, hit 18.5 sacks, and made an all-pro team. And in 12 years, over 100 sacks. So very important position, a game-shifting type position. We know how important pass rusher is, and there were some periods in his career where he was an elite, elite pass rusher.
Yeah, in 2 years of 18 or more sacks spread out throughout his career. That's
not many have done that.
Yeah, that's really cool. It's not like you're on a hot streak, you know, doing right. That.
That's what pushed him over for me.
Yeah, all right, very solid. Okay, who do you have number four?
Number four is a guy we're all going to remember. Taken in 1996 by the Houston Oilers, I believe this was their last draft, would be running back, of course, Eddie George out of Ohio State. The number one thing that sticks out to me, workhorse, just a workhorse and a stud right out of the gate. Most of his accolades came in those first 5 years. He was Offensive Rookie of the Year. He was first-team All-Pro. He made Pro Bowls. He was third in the NFL MVP voting. I believe in 2000. 1,300 or more yards, Darren, in his first 5 years. There was 1 year where he got like – he was a couple yards short. So basically, his first 5 years, 1,300 yards. Not 1,000, 1,300. And then he had 450 yards rushing in the 99 postseason when they went to the Super Bowl. And then he didn't totally – die or fade after that. His last 3 years in Tennessee, he averaged right at 1,000 yards a year. And he 8 years, Darren, 8 years, never missed a start. Wow. First 8 years, never missed one start. And then it was over with Dallas 1 year at age 31. So those years, 8 years at that position, running the style that he ran, it's going to take a toll. He's not going to have a super long career. It's really the only kind of mark against him is that it just kind of dwindled a little bit earlier than some of the real Hall of Fame running backs. But, man, great, just a great workhorse back.
Yeah, I mean, you could probably say he might be one of the top Ohio State backs to have an NFL career after having a great college career.
Yeah, so. For sure. I mean, really, maybe he's number one, unless I'm forgetting somebody obvious. You know, he was better than Zeke. You know,
I was gonna say maybe that's the only one that would be neck and neck with him, you know, because none of the other ones that you know, you think about the
Archie Griffin, Marie, Claret.
Yeah. Claret and Archie Griffin, you know, they never really panned out in the NFL Eddie George did.
He certainly did.
Okay, so who do you have next?
Number three is a guy that's got a real interesting Hall of Fame case for me, and that is Earl Thomas, taken in 2010 by the Seahawks. What I really liked about him is, like, he arrived and so did the Legion of Boom. He was sort of like the catalyst in a lot of ways. He started every game for them from 2010 through 2015, every game. So that is the Legion of Boom era right there, right, when these defenses were awesome. So 12 more postseason games, including Super Bowls, two Super Bowls in that time frame. So every single start, all the postseason, all the regular season. Three first-team All-Pros. We talk about how important that is to us. Two second-team All-Pros, 30 career interceptions, all-decade team. Another thing that you and I really like for the 2010s. He had an odd ending in Seattle. A little bit controversial, kind of ugly. He did make the Pro Bowl in his final year with the Ravens in 2019. And then he had some like kind of weird off-field stuff. There was some rumors about him, maybe about being like, some people think that maybe because he wasn't necessarily universally liked, that it could hurt his Hall of Fame chances. There's some rumors about that, some chatter about that, that maybe some people are wanting to keep him out because he was maybe, I don't know if he was a little bit of a pain in the rear or what. I mean, he was awesome. And to me, I feel like he's a Hall of Famer. When I watched the Seahawks play those years on those great defenses, it was always like Earl Thomas at the top of the list, right? With, you know, Bobby Wagner and some of the others.
And Cam Chancellor and Richard Sherman. You know, they had a great back end on that defense, that's for sure.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, great, great player. Good selection. All right, who do you have next?
Number two on my list is the one quarterback that's been taken since 1980 at this pick, and that is Jim Kelly, taken in 1983 by the Bills. Now, of course, it's really important to remember this. He entered the league at age 26, so drafted in 83, and his first year in the league was 85 or 86. So he really hit his stride in his third year. So it wasn't like until he was like 28 that he really became a big-time player in the league. And, you know, when I'm looking at him, I'm looking at – I think your numbers have to be kind of graded on a curve when we look at quarterbacks from that era, because, you know, if we compare them to today, they don't stand out as much, but that's kind of unfair, right? So you just kind of have to go back to how you felt about him at the time. The K-gun offense, that was a big deal. He did have 8 years over 3,000 yards. He led the league in touchdowns with 33 in 1991. One thing that's really a nice thing in his favor, Darren, is he is 101-59, his career record. So a winner. And he was 9-8 in the playoffs. I know four of those, of course, of those eight losses were in the Super Bowl. But he did have a 9-8 career winning record in the postseason. And now one thing that was interesting, his interception to touchdown ratio in the postseason was 21-28. So he threw a ton of picks in the postseason, including, get this, Darren, he threw 9 interceptions in the 1991 postseason alone. So that's just something kind of that speaks more to that era of football that we saw more of. Because now, my gosh, if Caleb Williams threw 9 interceptions in the playoffs this year, he would have been, you know, taken out of Chicago and thrown into the lake. You know what I mean? It's you know, it's unbelievable. But also Kelly means a whole – my mom's family, I've mentioned this before, is from Buffalo. He means a whole lot to Buffalo. He made it his adopted home. I think he's stayed there. He's a prominent figure there. He is a legend there. He is in the NFL, he's in the Pro Football Hall of Fame, and absolutely worthy, I think, of this slot in my list.
And he's another one of the legendary Western Pennsylvania quarterbacks, you know, the breeding ground. He came out of the Pittsburgh area.
All this Western PA talk.
That's right. That's right. You got to give the love to the hometown and home.
And you're trying to segue to number one here, aren't you?
Well, I want to talk a little bit about Kelly, you know, because a lot of people just sort of glance over, you know, you talk about those 2 years in the USFL. I mean, this guy was outstanding. He had his highest years of passing. Okay, you're playing in the USFL. It's not the NFL. But there was a lot of talent in the USFL in those 2 years in the 1980s. I mean, his first year with the Houston Gamblers, he threw for 5,200 yards, 44 TDs. Second year, 4,600 yards, 39 TDs. He did not have anywhere near that in 1 year touchdowns in the NFL as he did there. He was nowhere near the 40 mark. But you talked about the interceptions. He had 26 interceptions as a rookie with those 44 touchdowns, and he had 19 interceptions his second year with the Gamblers.
Right. It speaks to that era. Interceptions were way higher back in those days. It was just a little bit of a different game. So I kind of don't want to hold that against him. It's better to compare him to his contemporaries at the time.
Yeah, that's very true. But
yeah, and he was clearly one of the best quarterbacks through his era of playing in the NFL.
But, you know, he was still contending with great defenders, you know, like names escapes me right now. Played for the Memphis.
Reggie White.
Yeah, Reggie White was in there. The Memphis Southmen had some Reggie White, yep. And they had another really great pass
Herschel Walker, Gary Clark. There's a lot of them.
Yeah, yeah. So there was a lot of talent in USFL, that's for sure.
No doubt. Yep.
Yeah. Okay, so who do you have next on your list?
Number one, this wasn't too hard. That's 2007 cornerback drafted by the Jets. So finally we can say something nice about the Jets. We've put them on the bust list a lot. And that's Darrelle Revis. Just pretty obvious. He only missed three games in his first 5 years. Three straight first team all pros, which is very rare. It coincided with a brief period of success for the Jets. So not only if you're a Jets fan, can you remember Revis as a phenomenal player, but it was also during a time where it was all right to be a Jets fan for those few years, probably in large part because of Revis. He had this 2012 season was wiped out for injury. And then he moved on to Tampa, where he made the Pro Bowl. And then I think what makes him like a clear number one on the list is when he went to the Patriots in 2014, was on the Super Bowl and was AP first team again. So it looked like that injury might knock him down. And then he was on a Super Bowl team where he was also first team all pro. Back to the Jets, briefly with the Chiefs. Is he the greatest Jet of all time? I think that is probably an interesting debate, interesting conversation. He is one of the better cornerbacks of all time. I don't know if I'd put him like in the top five, but he's probably in the argument. Revis Island.
I'd probably say Joe Namath's probably going to be considered the greatest Jet of all time.
In terms of like his impact on the Jets, it would be Joe Namath, but he was probably not as good of a quarterback as Revis was a cornerback. If you're looking at it from that perspective, in terms of what he means to the Jets, it's probably Namath. Yes. Yeah. But yeah, Revis was awesome. Easy Hall of Famer. And one of the better cornerbacks of the last, let's say, like 40 years in the NFL at least.
And guess what else he has going for him?
What's that?
Western Pennsylvania.
Western Pennsylvania. Pitt graduate. Yeah, Western Pennsylvania. Yeah, I know all about it. Yeah.
Yep. All right. That is definitely some great players that you talk about.
Have you ever mentioned that my brother-in-law is from Pittston?
No. Well, yeah, I think you have. Yeah, you have.
I hear it all the time, man. And he's a Pitt grad.
Okay, so... You hear a lot about Revis then.
Yeah, that's great. Yeah.
And lucky for you, we're going to be talking about a lot more Western Pennsylvanias as we go through the next 13 slots of this program.
I know it's coming.
All right. So you have, that's two Hall of Famers that you talked about since 1980, Jim Kelly and Darrelle Revis. But we also had some other great Hall of Famers. 1974, Denver took Randy Gradishar, the great linebacker who was in the Pro Football Hall of Fame. Dave Robinson was drafted by Green Bay in 1963, and Gino Marchetti was drafted by not the Baltimore Colts, that's where he's famous for, but the Dallas Texans, and the Dallas Texans were the Colts before they were the Colts.
I would have just guessed the Colts.
Yeah, the interesting story, the Baltimore Colts that came out of the AAFC with the 49ers and the Cleveland Browns are not the Colts that we see today. Baltimore Colts team ended up drying up, and eventually they moved the Dallas Texans from Dallas and moved up to be in Baltimore and renamed the Colts legacy there. But you also have some great players that are not in the Hall of Fame. Well, College Football Hall of Fame, maybe. Niall Kinnick, who is a Iowa Heisman Trophy winner in 1940. He was drafted by Brooklyn in the 15th spot. And Frank Philchok was a drafted by Pittsburgh in 1938, and Marty Lyons, a defensive end from the New York Jets, part of those stock exchange teams we talked about earlier. He was drafted in the 14th spot as well. So some great players that all around here in the 14th spot. Total of five Hall of Famers. Six Hall of Famers. Most popular position drafted at the number 14 spot was defensive end, and that was sort of a landslide. A lot of great defensive ends. We just talked about a few of them during our segment today. And our draft stat of the day, now, we talked about a crazy one yesterday, but we had another NFL innovation, and it was called the bonus pick. Have you ever heard of the bonus pick?
I don't think so.
I never did either. It was kind of interesting to read about this. So I'm going to read this word for word how I came out here. It was a short-lived experiment for league parity that happened from 1947 to 1958. 1947, the NFL introduced this unique bonus choice to draft. It was a special first overall pick determined by a lottery. So all the teams were put in a hat, the Chicago Bears and George Halas. Imagine that. He had the very first one in 1947. And so they had the number one pick. And then the worst
check that team, hat.
Yeah, the next one would get it. But what they would do is they did it for 12 years because each team got a chance. So the Chicago Bears were eliminated out of that hat the next year.
Okay.
And they ended up going. So each team that was in the NFL, all 12 of them, got the selections for it. And so each of them got it. And once the team won the lottery, they weren't eligible to win it again for that 12-year period. So just a little bit of NFL draft history. With the bonus pick, which
bonus pick. All right. Okay.
So can you imagine if Seattle won that and they had the
right.
bonus pick and number bonus one draft pick this
right,
year?
Right,
you know,
right. Yep.
Be up in arms. It would be a murder cry. But that's sort of what we have for slot number 14 today. You know, we are counting them down and we're going to go to lucky number 13 tomorrow. So tune in again and we'll be right here with our friend Ed Cleese. Ed, thanks for joining us.
See you tomorrow, Darren.
That's all the football history we have today, folks. Join us back tomorrow for more of your football history. We invite you to check out our website, pigskindispatch.com, not only to see the daily football history, but to experience positive football with our many articles on the good people of the game, as well as our own football comic strip, Cleat Marks Comics. Pigskindispatch.com is also on social media outlets, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and don't forget the Pigskin Dispatch YouTube channel to get all of your positive football news and history.
Hi, everyone. There's a new podcast in town, Statman and Robin. We are the dynamic duo of Baltimore sports history.
We have lots of stories to tell about the great and not so great teams and players in Baltimore's rich sports history, and some of the more obscure ones, too.
We grew up together with these teams and players, and we'll add our experiences to these great stories.
Yep, we were there for a lot of them. Join us here on the Sports History Network.